Dip, 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 dip. Sha-la-la-la, sha-la-la-la, puddle. Sha-la-la-la, sha-la-la-la, puddle. Sha-la-la-la, sha-la-la-la, puddle. Sha-la-la-la, sha-la-la-la, puddle. Dip, 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 dip.
Good evening. This is the Labor Exchange. I'm Dennis Kreese, a member of the Boulder Area Labor Council, AFL-CIO. The subject of tonight's program is immigration, caravan, the Romero Theater Troupe, and other issues. As before, very special guest to address this subject, Dr. James Walsh, political science professor, University of Colorado, Denver. Jimmy, thanks again for being back on the Labor Exchange here at KGNU.
Great to be here, Dennis.
Jim, as before, let's reacquaint the KGNU listening audience, especially our new and younger members, with who you are. How has your career work evolved since arriving in Colorado 20 or more years ago?
Yeah, I am a political science professor. I'm actually an historian, but I teach in the political science department at the University of Colorado, Denver. I've been there, this is my 22nd year. I arrived in Colorado 30 years ago from Western Pennsylvania, and I also run a community theater called the Romero Theater Troupe.
And we're going to talk about that later. Jim, you have some impressive academic background, and I'll just mention what I know. Correct me if I'm wrong. You have from Duke, it's either a BS or a BA, and then University of Colorado is where you got your PhD. So, you know, congratulations, and like I told you, I've always been impressed with that. But our bonding comes to this question. How has your background, Western Pennsylvania, contributed to your present perspective of all workers and their families?
Well, I would say it's the very reason that I do the work that I do. I come from, I was born in a town called Butler, Pennsylvania. It's a steel town about an hour north of Pittsburgh, and just came from a big Irish Catholic working class family, and those values and that perspective on the world have never left me. So when I decided to enter academics, it became the area that I wanted to focus my labor studies on was working people, I've never been much interested in the history of politicians and wars and Rockefellers. I'm much more interested in struggles, daily struggles that people go through. I went to Duke University, but not the avenue that most people take to Duke. I got there via a wrestling scholarship. Had a successful wrestling career in Pennsylvania. And that was my ticket to Duke, and I ended up landing in a world that was this world of privilege and wealth that I could have never imagined. So it's a difficult time for me to adapt, given that I was from a rural high school, not very high quality, and the students I was suddenly immersed with were from private high schools and had all the advantages in the world. So I developed a class consciousness at Duke and began to see my experience as unique and important and my voice as important. And that has defined all of the work I do since then.
Okay. Before I get into the next question, I'll just mention to the listening audience, you're being modest, 1985. You were the state champ in the 155 division in the state of Pennsylvania. No one does that, and there was no one at Duke who probably did that either. So take that as credit to you. Jim, let's move on to immigration, caravan. So as per our past three interviews, November 14, 2016, December 11, 2017, November 12, 2018, could you give an update on the proposed memorial to the unknown, which includes many children, Irish immigrants, minors, and their families from 1870 to 1890 at the Evergreen Cemetery, Lake County, near Leadville?
Yes, absolutely. So Leadville had one of the largest Irish immigrant communities in the entire Rocky Mountain region in the 19th century. There were over 3,000 Irish-born people there in the 1880s due to the Silver Rush. And these Irish immigrants were pretty much at the bottom rung of the social ladder, and they died young, and they were buried. Thousands of them were in unmarked graves in the back of the cemetery in what was called the Catholic Free Section. And so that section of the cemetery is acres and acres of sunken graves in a forest in the back of Evergreen, and has always held a really important space for me. And so in working with the Irish government and the local Irish American community, we have raised a lot of money, upwards of $100,000 to construct a memorial in the back of the cemetery that honors those who are unnamed and unknown to history. It's an important story because the average age of those buried there is something like 21 or 22. And that alone tells you how difficult life was. 48% of the people buried there are under the age of 13 or 12 or under. So nearly a majority of them are children. So the more I learned about this cemetery and what the cemetery says about life for these Irish immigrants, I was determined that their stories needed to be told and their names needed to be known. So we have some designers have been working on this. One's in Ireland and one's local. And they're going to break ground with this memorial when the snow melts, probably May. And who knows when it'll be completed, possibly when the snow starts to fly in the fall. So it's going to be an exciting year. But what this really is a visible reminder of life for Irish immigrants in the Rocky Mountain West in the late 19th century. That there's nothing like it. There's famine memorials in New York and Boston and Chicago and all over the East Coast. There's an Irish memorial in San Francisco. There's one being designed in New Orleans. But in terms of the Rocky Mountain West, this is it. So we see this not just as something to commemorate and tell a story of Irish in Colorado. We see this really as something that tells the story of Irish in the Rocky Mountain region in general, which is a story that really is not known. And so it's been exciting. It's been rewarding. I'm proud of the committee that I've worked with and the work we've all done together.
Yeah,
I'm looking forward to the unveiling. That'll be sometime in the next year.
I'm proud of you, too. You've been the initiator, and you've done great work here. So with that said, Jim, as before, could you make a connection of these Irish immigrant miners, 1870 to 1890, with those immigrants of today, especially those from El Salvador, Honduras, Guatemala, and Mexico? What are some of the similarities?
Yeah, so the more I became immersed in this work, the more it occurred to me that it would be incomplete just to tell the story of these Irish immigrants in the 19th century immigrant workers without using that story to highlight 21st century immigrant workers. And the more I talked about that and talks I gave, the more it seemed to resonate with people that this is an important moment for Irish Americans to look at their own story, the roots of Irish culture here in the West, and to use that to reflect on what immigrants today face coming to this region, particularly in a moment that we live in today with such elevated xenophobia and with an administration that has been so brutally targeting of immigrant community in terms of incarceration, in terms of deportation, and also asylum seekers, I would add. So to tell a story like the 19th century Irish immigrants but not tell the story of the 21st century immigrants today would be incomplete.
Jim, and let's get in.
Tying those together has been really important.
I got two questions on the caravan, you know, and like there's, that's maybe decreased to a certain degree, but could you share your thoughts, reflections on the caravan, you know, in the past couple of years, various ones of Central American immigrants making their way to the U.S. border? What is the real story here, and why are they traveling in such a large group?
Well, I think the whole concept, the term caravan and the concept of a caravan has been politicized by the Trump administration in a way, and the fear tactic to scare people in the United States, and even terms like invasion have been used in that regard. But the fact of the matter is that people come in large numbers because it offers safety.
Exactly.
And it offers comfort. And that's been lost in all the fear-mongering that's been bandied about. So we have to keep in mind that people come in numbers because they have to, because they're safe. They're safer in that regard. And unfortunately, that's been misused in a scaremongering kind of way.
Jim, back just one final thing on this caravan. President of the United States, Trump, has been shamelessly exploiting this effort, which you just mentioned, by these thousands of Central Americans attempting to seek asylum and thus live a better life. What historical role has the United States played in the poverty, violence, and lack of real democracy in El Salvador, Honduras, and Guatemala?
Yeah, in that region of Central America, the U.S. has played a central role in shaping the economic and political reality of those countries. That begins with corporations like the United Fruit Company that has dominated countries like Guatemala for decades. That includes U.S. seeing that region as a sort of a puppet state at best, or even as an extension of the U.S. And whenever there's a regime that isn't 100% on board with U.S. and U.S. corporate hegemony, that regime is taken out militarily, sometimes covertly, and sometimes militarily. So, you know, the CIA taking out President Arbenz in Guatemala in the 50s through putting in power Pinochet in Chile in the 70s, the 2008 coup in Honduras, the School of the Americas in Georgia, and the role of the U.S. training mercenaries of Latin American countries for so many decades. All of this, I think, to people who don't know this history, it's overwhelming because it's so much. But to understand migration and asylum seeking people today is to know that history. And if one doesn't know that history, it's impossible to understand that. So the U.S. military intervention, U.S. foreign policy in those regions, corporate hegemony in those regions, beginning with the United Fruit Company, and today companies like Newmont Mining, all of that is an example, is a reflection of the U.S. seeing itself as really, in many ways, the father of all of Latin America, going back to the Monroe Doctrine when the U.S. declared that the Western Hemisphere was its turf.
Jim,
that's a really important element.
I think generally speaking, that we talked about this last time, and it's a foregone conclusion, but the present problem and some of the past problems, the United States they're part of the problem, not the solution. And I don't know what the solution could be, because there's just too much, you know, there's too much suffering and too much violence. And you know, the people that are seeking asylum, you know, that's their last hope. And so, you know, hopefully moving forward, you know, there'll be some better outcomes. Jim, let's move on to something you initiated and you've done just great work with over the years, and that's the Romero Theater Troupe. As in the past, could you educate this KGNU listening audience about the origins and production of the Romero Theater Troupe? And how has it brought a unique perspective of the struggles of workers in Colorado and the United States?
Yeah, and this relates to the last question as well, because this community theater called the Romero Troupe is named after Oscar Romero, who was a bishop in El Salvador. And when he spoke up against what was happening in El Salvador, the government, you know, committing a kind of genocide, he was assassinated himself in 1980. So we carry his name as a reminder of what our mission is. And what we do is we're just a group of volunteers without any theater training or background whatsoever. And we use the stage, we use the art of theater to tell stories, stories that have been forgotten, stories that are unknown, stories that are untold, stories that are censored. So, for example, the story of the School of the Americas, the story of Oscar Romero, the story of working people trying to organize for better working conditions, the story of immigrant communities today resisting mass deportation and incarceration. So that's what we do. We come together through a process called, we call it organic theater, which is really just a term that means we make it up together. There's no director, there's no script. So it's a very unique form of theater, but it's really beautiful to watch it work itself out. And the final product is a series of stories that the audience wants to learn and wants to know. And when it's presented theatrically, there's a magic to it. So we're celebrating our 15th anniversary. We've been around 15 years without any sort of formal structure or budget. Everything we need is donated. And when we raise donations at our shows, we give those away to organizations that are doing what we consider to be the real work on the streets. We just tell stories on stage. So 15 years, we've performed hundreds of times. We've had great success with filling up big theaters and kind of rallying the larger community to different causes and different issues. We've had great success in doing that. And so we're going to be performing at Regis University on March 24th to celebrate our 15th anniversary. And it's also the 40th anniversary of Romero's assassination. Well, so we hope people will come out and celebrate our 15 years and commemorate the life of Oscar Romero at the same time.
Yeah, let's just delve back into him a little bit, a little more detail. Archbishop Oscar Romero, also known as now, as of Sunday, October 14, 2019, when he was canonized, Saint Oscar Romero. So, Jim, just who was Archbishop Oscar Romero, and how did he inspire, motivate the Salvadorian people, especially workers and their families, in the face of a repressive military dictatorship?
Yeah, so what makes this story so unique is that his origins as a priest and a bishop were, he was quite conservative. In fact, that's the reason that the regime appointed him, is that he was sort of their guy in the Catholic hierarchy. And what makes his story so unique is that he flipped, he turned, he largely due to the murder of one of his colleagues, Father Grande. Romero did a 180, and he began speaking out against the regime and challenging the Salvadoran military to disobey orders. He began to see the impact and among the poor in El Salvador that the war was having, indigenous communities and poor communities.
Jim.
And for doing so, he was assassinated. And because of that, he's a martyr all over Central America, particularly among the poor.
So you've answered the why, and the when was 1980. And where was he assassinated? If my memory serves me correctly, he was saying mass and got shot and killed there.
That's right. He was giving mass, and the assassins broke into the church and shot him right on the altar.
Yeah, there's one who's raised Catholic and still practicing Roman Catholic, and there's others that think the way with me. This is probably the most incredible type of brutality and murder, you know, one could do. And so the fact that he eventually got canonized, I thought was, you know, all in, you know, due time. It was good.
Yeah, and I think it's to Pope Francis's credit to help push that through. I think the Vatican dragged its feet on recognizing the importance of Romero's work for a while, and it just recently finally got through. So everyone that knows Romero's legacy is thrilled about that.
Jim, we have about 5 minutes left, maybe four. But next thing I was going to we talked about it before we started this interview, and it is a speaking event, Kingdom and Colony, Irish Resistance and Survival to English Conquest. Jim, could you discuss the details of this event that will be presented by the Rocky Mountain Irish Roots Collective on Tuesday, March 3rd at 6 p.m. at the Casa Mian Aurora campus?
Yes, thanks. So this is tomorrow's event is next in an organization I founded a year ago. It's called the Rocky Mountain Irish Roots Collective, and what I'm doing is I'm inviting anyone in the community that wants to be part of bringing Irish history and culture into the larger community through planning events such as panel discussions, film screenings, talks, storytelling, music, that once a month we'll get together and plan events. Anyone can bring an event. Anyone can suggest an event, and we plan it together. We meet at the Casa Mayan, which is an historic house on Auraria campus that was one of the first Mexican restaurants originally in Denver, and a very important place that resisted the displacement of the people on Auraria campus when the campus was built and the community was displaced. The Casa Mayan, the family, the Gonzalez family, resisted that displacement. So we meet there, and we actually have a lot of Irish events there at the Casa Mayan. Tomorrow night's talk is by a professor from Ireland. He teaches at University College Cork in County Cork. His name's Hiram Morgan, and he specializes in how the Irish resisted English imperialism. So please come out. It starts at 6 o'clock. If you can make it, it's on Auraria campus on what's called the 9th Street Historic Park, which is right on campus. And starts at 6 o'clock. And if you're interested in the collective, please email me and I can put you on the list. It's james.walsh@ucdenver.edu.
And just finally, with that, finish up on that question, is that this topic and everything, and it's still relevant today in Ireland and also to many struggles and conflicts throughout the world where they have, you know, someone who's mastered them or controlled them for not just decades, but hundreds of years.
This is something that defines Irish society today, really, is, you know, what some will say is 800 years of occupation. And so in many ways, Irish culture is constructed around the concept of resistance to imperialism, resistance to occupation, resistance to cultural imperialism, resistance to English-only laws, the penal codes, and all the way up to resistance to Brexit,
yeah.
which is a big deal in Ireland today. In fact, it may actually unify North and South, whereas nothing else could do that. Brexit might do that. So,
yeah, it's interesting.
So the talk has a wide range.
Yeah, it's interesting. I've been following that development. That would be interesting if it did unify our, you know, all 32 counties, the 26 from the south and the 6 from the north. Jim, let's get into a summary. And, you know, we have probably 2 minutes. And it's all, what I always do is it. Do you have any final thoughts or comments for this KGNU listening audience in the context of tonight's subject, immigration, caravan, Romero Theater Troupe, and other issues?
Well, I hope some of the listeners can come on March 24th. It's at Regis University, and it starts at 6 o'clock. There's pupusas we'll have before the – actually, there's a liturgy for Oscar Romero at 5 o'clock, and then there will be a procession from the chapel to the Mountain View Room at 6 o'clock. We'll have pupusas, and then the Romero Troupe starts at 7. So please do come out if you can. The talk tomorrow night as well at the Casa Mayan, which is 1020 9th Street. And maybe my last thought would just be, we do live in a special and important time, a time when immigrant communities are being targeted in very draconian ways, and a time when I think people not affected and not impacted by these laws might need to take a look at their role and the need to step up as allies and to speak up.
And you've had two of your participants or members of Romero Theater Troupe deported. Is that correct?
That's right. One of our longtime members was just deported. And the crazy thing about his deportation is his wife is U.S.-born, and they have 4 U.S.-born children. They're all citizens. And so his wife and their 3 youngest have had to make the decision to move to Mexico City so they can be with her father. And so what we're saying is that we can do better. We can have laws. We can have systems in place where families are valued and where people who are contributing members to society are valued. And that, I think that would be probably an appropriate place to end right there.
I think it is. So for those of you who have joined us late, this has been Labor Exchange. I'm the host, Dennis Kreese, and the subject of tonight's program was immigration, caravan, Romero Theater Troupe, and other issues. And with us, as always and before, Dr. James Walsh, political science professor, University of Colorado, Denver. Jimmy, thank you for being on Labor Exchange at KGNU. And if anybody has any comments about this show or any other show on KGNU, please call 303-447-9911. And next week, Monday, March 9th, 2020, please listen to La Lucha Sigue at 6 p.m. This has been the Labor Exchange, and I am Dennis Kreese for KGNU Community Radio.